Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. Let's face it, the future is now. We're living in a connected cyber society, and we need to stop ignoring it or pretending that it's not affecting us. Join us as we explore how humanity arrived at this current state of digital reality and what it means to live amongst so much technology and data. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impact of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io. RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com.
And we are off. And Marco?
Sean, what's happening?
Well, you know, we tend to build technology and our lives for the mass public, right? So either the highest common denominator or lowest common denominator, and we don't always tend to look at different specifics of who people are and how they think and how they function or not.
Yeah, and our society tend to look at things in black and white because that's easy, right? It's black and white, is good, is bad, is heaven or hell. Well,
Well, money
truth
or,
is there is a lot in between. There where is a
make,
lot.
Where can I make the most money?
But there is a lot in between, and sometimes it's an economical decision. Of course, people that create products, they want to sell to most people possible, but there is so much that we can gain from looking at technology and see what it can do for what you could consider not the majority, but nevertheless, a really large chunk of our society, our communities. And this is just about any kind of diversity. But today, in particular, we're talking about a specific niche, and we're going to be guests.
That's right.
We're not going to be the host because it's a podcaster already, amongst many other things.
One's not enough, two's not enough. Three podcasts, Doug Flecker hosts. And Doug, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for hosting us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you ask the questions, we try to answer, and it's gonna be a problem. So let's stop that right away. So let's start from the beginning. We're gonna talk about how technology can and should even more help people with disabilities of any kind. I hate to use the word disability, but that's what people understand. For me, it's just diversity. And we all have our own chunk of diversity. Nobody's equal, and thank God for that. So, but to be more specific, how can technology help to overcome certain particular niche of our society? That's what we're going to talk about today. But a little introduction about yourself and what qualifies you to be the host of three podcasts about this.
Goes back about 20 years. So I've been working with autistic folks for about 20 years. I started out working with children, and after about 7 or 8 years of working with kids and supporting them, I thought, well, what happens when these kids like grow up and they're teens and then they become adults, you know, like where is the support there? So I at that time was in Cincinnati, Ohio, and did some research and found out there was not much there. And then I ended up facilitating an adult support group for the Autism Society in Cincinnati. And it just acted as a support group where myself and then the group members would give advice. And the person would leave the group. And I thought, okay, well, they they are leaving better off than when they arrived. But what would happen is they'd come back 2 weeks later, and in many cases, they'd still be in a similar spot of, you know, where they were 2 weeks prior. And then I realized, oh, adults need that support like children do, but in different ways, and in different things relating to employment, relationships, college, all those things. So that was
life.
Life.
Exactly.
The majority of our life is being an adult. And, you know, and there's so many challenges to that, more so than ever. Anyway, that's when I decided to create Autism Personal Coach, where we provide coaching to adults and teens to reduce their overwhelm in their life and to help them get the things that they need and want. So along the way, I've learned that while I learned a lot from professionals, I learned a lot from parents, learned a lot from reading books, going to conferences, the most I've learned is from when I'm coaching or supporting autistic people, and they're kind of the true experts of the autistic experiences. So that's when I started my podcast, Autism Stories, to interview autistic adults on a weekly basis to learn from their stories, experiences, and get their advice. And now I am co-hosting two other autistic-related podcasts. So as the two of you know, it's more time-consuming than people realize.
There's a lot going on there, And and thank you for doing all of that, Doug, and for sharing what you're up to. And I mean, so many questions in my mind. The first that I'd like to dig into is supporting folks. What does that take? Because it sounds like you're working initially as a group, and then they go off and they need further support individually, or do they stay as a group? Because what I'm wondering is, do our traditional coaching and mentoring models apply for folks who are autistic, and or do we need to change that? And I also suspect the environment also needs to be coached, not just the individuals, correct?
For sure. You know, if we can change our society that is not supportive of autistic people, that would be certainly a helpful thing. But that's a bigger, much bigger picture. So I would say that, you know, coaching over probably the last decade or two has just really grown in general. There's life coaches. I myself has a business coach. Bill Gates said everyone needs a coach of some form. So coaching is really, I think, a valuable tool. But it doesn't have that. It's not tailored to autistic people. So our specific type of coaching is specific to autistic people in terms of helping them to advocate for their needs. In terms of, you know, they have a lot of sensory sensitivities, whether it is to light, sound, you know, like there's this terrible stereotype that autistic people are not empathetic. In fact, it's the exact opposite. They're overly empathetic. And just, you know, the responses to people can, you know, really affect them. So dealing with those types of things. And then we get into like barriers of transportation. You know, the employment statistics are terrible. Maintaining employment statistics are terrible for autistic people because, you know, big part is it's this invisible disability. But in order to be employed, you know, you need consistent transportation. So that's a big barrier. And we kind of help support people in develop those transportation plans. I think another important thing is every autistic person is different. So we try to coach people on figuring out what does it mean for my life to be autistic? And it means a little bit different for everyone.
And I think this goes both ways, right? In the meaning, like, it's kind of also a matter of perspective. You can't just coach the autistic person or or the neurodiverse person, but you also have to coach the people that interact with them, which should be the rest of society. So as you said, would be nice if we could change the paradigm and society just simply understand that everybody is different in a way or in another, and we need to be understanding and help each other, right? And not just to expect that everybody perceive the world in the same way. And that goes for people that are deaf. I remember we were talking, we were having a conversation with another host, a guest a while back, where the point was like, for a person that was born deaf, it's normal to don't hear. It doesn't mean that they feel disabled. That's just the state that they are. Mm-hmm. And other things are making him feel disabled. Like if you're in a wheelchair, it'll make you feel disabled because there are stairs everywhere. It's not that you feel different. So how can we not only coach, that's a big question, but how can we just not coach the autistic person, but the everyone else?
Yeah, so I don't have any easy answers for you, but
no, I was sure about that. Yeah. That was,
but it won it for first. It's a great question, and for what we do in terms of our specific coaching is when people come to us, they've heard their entire, you know, a lot of times they're 20, 25, 30. We've coach people in their 40s, 50s, even into their in their 60s. You know, that might have just even recently been diagnosed. We've had a few people in their 60s recently diagnosed. So they've been hearing messages from society, messages from family members, from supervisors, coworkers, friends, romantic partners, their entire life, that is saying, you know, what they're doing wrong or their problems. And the disabling part a lot of times becomes the attitudes of society and the messages that are given to them. So, you know, there's this internalized, some, you know, almost, I don't want to say hate, but just kind of judgment on themselves because of everything they've heard from society. So we coach them on kind of those things and then helping them, you know, hopefully if they're comfortable with it, to kind of advocate and teach those employers, teach those family members, teach those professors, you know, teach their, you know, friends and family members. So while I'd love for it to be a big answer, I think it's just a lot of times, you know, that one person at a time, unfortunately, educating non-autistic people or neurotypical people, and it goes beyond, you know, being autistic, you know, neurodivergent people, you know, people with ADHD, dyslexia, other types of disabilities, to educate society. So unfortunately, it's slow moving. We're making progress, but we still have a lot of work to go.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And Doug, it's probably a vicious circle. For what kind of Marco's pointing to is, if society can recognize the difference, perhaps we can respond in a different way. And it's fairly easy to recognize a wheelchair.
Yeah. Right?
Fairly easy to recognize a gender, maybe. Fairly easy to recognize the color of the skin. And not that that should make you act differently necessarily, but maybe in some cases it should. The what you're just describing there, that there's this internal focus on themselves of, there's something wrong, I'm not right, I'm functioning differently, and that's not good for society. Yet we're kind of asking them to wear a badge to say, tell me or show me your difference so that we can adjust. So I'm wondering how, and this is where I really want to dig into technology as a means to either find places that are more ready to accept autistic people, or technology to maybe bypass points of trouble, right? We do this in business all the time, right? The workflow is not working. We skip a step, we reroute it, whatever it is, and we avoid a conflict, we avoid a hurdle. So I'm wondering if technology has a role in helping autistic people kind of find a safe space, interact with others in a safe way that makes them comfortable.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when we're supporting people to kind of like understand, like, what does it mean for me to be autistic? You know, a big component of that is, while they're going to certainly have non-autistic community and a support network, is finding other autistic people to, and because they understand a lot of the things that you go through. So to find, and a lot of times finding that community, a great space to do that is online, is through social media. And it's very easy to find. There's so many autistic people. There's certain hashtags like actually autistic or openly autistic, and you can kind of, there's such great education online, and there's a lot of groups that can really like help you to understand like who you are presently and who you want to be like moving forward. Like that's, you know, an important identity that people have. So that I think, you know, social media, while there's certainly challenges to social media, that can be a great avenue for people.
So I can imagine that space being fantastic for the community, autistic community itself. How open and welcoming is it, or are they? And maybe there are different ones that are different levels, but for people outside the community to join and participate to better understand.
I think the autistic online community is very, very welcoming. I think sometimes, like, if there's like parents of autistic kids or professionals, sometimes, you know, when the autistic community is kind of trying to educate them, they're almost like shut down, like saying like, you know, in terms of language to use or certain things that, you know, professionals think. And in reality, maybe an autistic person might say, no, that's not really the case. So I feel like that's kind of where like the friction starts to happen.
And let me ask you this. I mean, obviously technology, I like to define technology as a better way to communicate, you know, at least that's a big part of it. And you just outlined the fact that it's making a big world a little bit closer to each other, and it's allowing many different community to go there and say, okay, I'm not alone. There is actually a lot of people like me. Is accessibility to technology at this point a problem for a certain community or not? Can government, nonprofit groups do more about that? I think we've seen this a lot in this last year where we all needed to be connected eventually, and some people have their own issue in doing that. What's your take on that?
Well, I think there's a lot of even barriers to digital space to autistic people. I think like there's, you know, there can be vision challenges. So there's a lot of comorbidities to being autistic. So there can be some vision challenges that websites might not be as accessible to certain people. Social media might not be as accessible. Sometimes there's comprehension challenges to websites and social media. So websites and social media that are, to be more accessible, they need to be more so in plain language, because, you know, some people don't have some adults don't have comprehension levels based, you know, college comprehension reading levels, you know, and things like that, or, you know, not are necessarily understanding of those things. So like all, you know, so, and then, you know, so I think there's vision issues. I think there's comprehension in videos, because some people, there's some processing language issues, just, you know, just that is an issue. So making sure that if you have video, to make sure you're captioning it, I think those are things, you know, and, you know, just doing, there's a lot of simple things you can do. Like Google has like a tool to test if your website is mobile friendly. That kind of goes a long way. Our website is not perfect in terms of accessibility. We still have work to do. We've made a lot of progress over the years, but yeah, I think it's all, you know, being aware of those things in order to make those things accessible. Even like people that use screen readers, like on links, you shouldn't just say, click here. It should be a more descriptive thing for like people that are using screen readers to be able to access your information.
Interesting. I like those examples, and I'm curious your thoughts on where we're doing well versus not in different parts of life. So we've talked a lot about bringing the community together and giving them a space to support each other, and hopefully those communities, web or mobile, deliver that experience in a way that's comfortable for them. But let's talk about shopping and travel and visiting the doctor and looking for a job. And I mean, there's a lot to living, right? Yeah. That we can easily brush under the carpet. So are there areas where we just get this right? And are there, and can you point to some examples there, or, and maybe areas where we can do some improvement?
Well, all those areas you mentioned are key, and, you know, like shopping, going to the doctor, employment can all be overwhelming, very overwhelming. In fact, restaurants and grocery stores are some of the most overwhelming places on earth, and I could talk about that. But I think we're starting. The key word starting is maybe making more inroads in terms of employment. I think the pandemic has helped some of those things in terms of, I think we need options for people. I think those are really key. So I'm hoping moving forward, we're going to continue to give people options, whether to, you know, to work from, you know, using Zoom options. When you're using Zoom, not always having to use video, because that can be very stressful to people. You know, there's more and more captioning options on some of those things that can be helpful. I also think it, you know, those things are important because there's a lot of autistic people on the spectrum that also have some chronic illness, and having options other than, you know, 9-to-5 situations are, you know, really, really important. But there's more and more programs for neurodivergent people happening. So that's great. I also think that neurodivergent folks, and I'm biased towards this being an entrepreneur, that I think a lot of neurodivergent folks are geared towards that. I mean, there's certainly challenges to the entrepreneur life, certainly. I can speak to that all day, but I think that is something that, you know, can be, really beneficial. You know, we're starting also, you know, delivery options for people, I think, is are certainly good things to reduce things like grocery shopping or going into a restaurant, the sensory sensitivities of those places and the communication needs, to reducing those things. So those things I think are helpful, but, you know, we need more of those.
We need options. Sure. Yes, we sure do. And one of my big fear every time that we talk about diversity of any kind is that we risk to marginalize a community. So instead of just the individual, then you just make a pocket of the community and say, all right, this is the stuff that is good for you, and you can live in this world, and everybody else can live somewhere else. And then you're going to end up with all these incredible amount of pockets, and that's not good. So I think ultimately, like where I was going before, the goal is that technology could help us to create a shareable world that just magically, and I'm doing the hair quotes here, works for everyone in the same place. And I'm going to ask you, if you see, as we're doing big steps or small steps, but maybe big step for humankind in general, in using technology for communication and all this kind of stuff, if there is some even advanced technology that you're excited about, I don't know, I'm just going to throw artificial intelligence, I'm going to throw machine learning or any other things that are used now in the medical community or in the everyday life and data, of course. Do you see some even more hope for more technology that can really change the game for diversity?
I think, you know, like some things like moving forward, like, you know, with, you know, self-driving cars can certainly be helpful, for a lot of people, you know, a lot of autistic folks. New people are anxiety provoking because you don't know what to expect. So even things like Uber are pretty stressful things because you might get an Uber driver that wants to talk a lot, you know.
Don't want that either. So
yeah. So maybe a self-driving car for you would work. So things like that. I think things like just daily living tasks, which are really stressful and overwhelming. Doing things. Living. People living on their own, especially if they have some, physical impairments as well. Robots and things like that moving forward to do some of those tasks can be really beneficial moving forward. And then there's some just like kind of like apps out there, I think, that are really helpful. Like yesterday, I just saw something called the Emergency Chat app that was created by an autistic developer, which, a lot of times speaking autistic people that have the language like that me and you have might just get overwhelmed. And they don't have words. So an app like that you can just kind of like show someone can be really helpful in those types of situations. So there's some basic technologies that are kind of already out there that are helping people. I think there are some future technologies that can definitely reduce the overwhelm of autistic folks and allow them to use their talents and gifts in all areas of life, because autistic people are in every job everywhere. You may just not know it.
Yeah, and I love that. And let's stick with the job part for a bit here, and let's look at workplace. I know you mentioned earlier that with the push from the pandemic to work from home, perhaps those opportunities and options are available, but still sometimes it requires people to be in an office or some space of some sort. Yeah. And so I want your view on the workspace. And we did a podcast a few weeks back talking to a building designer and talking about advanced technology in buildings. And perhaps it's an app that a person uses that shows where they are in the building and adjusts the lighting, adjusts the music, adjusts the temperature, adjusts whatever is personally acceptable or comfortable for that person. Maybe secures specific conference rooms because they're in a location. So I'm wondering, the workplace, what can companies do to make it comfortable? How can technology help?
Well, I mean, definitely open spaces are stressful spaces, whether it's at a workplace or a restaurant. So things like that. I think, like principles like universal design, which, things that can help reduce maybe someone's sensory needs, sensory sensitivities, those things that help autistic people help all people. Like thinking about universal design, thinking about elevators, you know, that's another example of universal designs. I think this technology is going to kind of going back to options. It's going to give people more options. I personally don't understand why even at restaurants and all public places, we have to constantly play music and then also have to have TVs on. Like that doesn't make any sense to me. So, but yeah, just having those options, not having every, you know, some things are just kind of basic things like, technology can certainly help with those things. But I think just, you know, basically, not having open space, being, you know, having dimmers for the lights, just having, you know, those options can go a long way. So technology certainly can help with these things, but we also have a lot of things that are already like things we've had for a long time in our society, and we're just not using them. And then just thinking about like if you're going to open up a new restaurant or you're going to have a business in a space, just like thinking about those spaces and working with, builders that are, you know, interior designers that are going to be knowledgeable about sound and those spaces can go a long way. I'd love to see more and more interior designers, you know, working in with universal design principles.
I will love that too. And I don't want to be the negative person here, but if we think about how long it'd take to society, and still we're working on it, to think about architect barriers to walk yeah. into buildings and open the doors and literally the basic. I mean, we're yeah. talking about basic things that are like, how could you not actually think about that? Are you kidding me? You know, so I truly hope right. that this is the way we're going, and that technology really, even like I ask you about artificial intelligence, because I'm thinking like if you start inputting data, and it can really help us to see things that we human don't, because we're full of bias. And if we can build artificial intelligence that think without those bias, maybe we can see things that they're so in front of our eyes and we're not seeing them. So I think that's important. But until then, as you started, I think that the most important people to listen to is actually the autistic people, if we want to do something for them. And I know in a past podcast, which I believe is how we got in touch with you, we were actually talking about how at a certain point, a lot of autistic and neurodiverse people say, you know what, if you don't want to accept me or give me the job environment that I need to have, I'm just going to start my own business. And I love that. Like, I'm going to prove you that not only we can do it, but we can do it very well. So I think the lesson here is, and this goes again to everyone, we got to listen to the people that have this particular situation. They're living it every day, and then improve based on them, not assume that we can do something without really experiencing what people go through. And that goes, I'm going to say, you know, about many other things that are invisible, from depression to, you know, other situations that are mental or physical related. So, and I hope that people listen to this and start thinking, which is what we really like to do when we do the podcast. We want people to think. That's our success.
So I'm going to bring it back full circle, and then I'm going to give you the final word, Doug, because I think we kind of opened this up with common denominator, right? In reality, nobody wants to be forced to an environment or a situation that isn't comfortable for them,
right?
Regardless of who you are and how you function. So I don't know why it's okay to do that for certain types of people. Let's say it's okay for them. So hopefully we can leverage technology, not rely on it. I don't think we shouldn't wait for technology to save the day. To your point, Doug, there are things we can do without technology now to address this. And hopefully we take a positive approach and think about this for not just others, but for yourself as one of the others from somebody else's perspective. So with that, Doug, a final word from you to our listeners. Any thoughts on how or where they can make a difference for this?
I think just, you know, people educating themselves on what it's like to be autistic, you know, going online, it's so easy to educate yourself. And then if you're, maybe you have a coworker, maybe they haven't, you know, they're not openly out that they're autistic, or maybe they've never been diagnosed. But if they have some similar, you know, characteristics to autistic folks, just, you know, asking them, you know, what they, you know, what you can do to help them to be more successful. I think that's something, you know, and I think it's always, it's so important to remember that one in four people in the United States are disabled in some way. So whether it's an intellectual disability, a developmental disability, a physical disability. I remember watching a documentary about a year ago, and it was called Crip Camp, a great documentary. And talked about how any one of us at any point of our lives can be a disabled person. So really, when we're talking about universal designs and supporting autistic people, this is not just about autistic people. It's not about disabled people. These are human rights and improving our society. And what if you yourself or a loved one is disabled at one point? How would you like your life to be?
Yeah. And I'm going to take with me, Doug, the point that it's not about a label or an assessment or a judgment. It's about what can I do to help you be successful? And that can apply to everybody, right? And the answer is going to be different coming back, but that's universal.
Labels only exist on clothing.
and sometimes they're wrong.
You're right.
Yeah. So I think the big lesson from what you said, it really stuck to me, is we need to redefine disability. Mm-hmm. When you said, you know, it's something that in a way or in another, we all have it. I mean, what is mm-hmm. that? What is that label again that somebody came up with?
So yeah.
Something to think about. And I want to invite, of course, our audience to think about this. We will have resources on this podcast. So Doug, please share with us any link that will be beneficial for people to learn more about it. Either they're not neurodiverse and want to learn about it, or people that are neurodiverse and want to see what else can they do for improve their life. So with that, thank you so very much. It was very eye-opening, and I really appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate both of you having this conversation. Thank you.
RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com. Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impacts of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. We'll be right back.